time frame with the social forum. There are going to be, you know, the polycentric sites. Maybe another big national one will happen. We don't know yet. But definitely local ones should always be happening and stuff. So.
And if you have ideas for a future PMA and you want to work it or talk about it, you can always contact us here at KBOO. Yeah. Mike Crenshaw, Monica Beamer, they'd be more than happy to talk to you about starting a PMA, begin to construct a PMA, and also ideas of how to present your PMA to people if you want people to get involved with your organization. Very easy. That's what KBOO is about, and that's why KBOO participated so heavily in the social forum in San Jose.
Right on.
All right. Thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For KBOO, this is Kristen Yount.
You've been listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is KBOO Portland. Up next is Right to Survive Radio. And in the meantime, check out these cool messages.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yes, that's right. This is KBOO Portland, and coming up is Right to Survive Radio. They traveled recently to the U.S. Social Forum, which you just heard about Kristen Yount speaking with Adam Carpinelli about. And here's some audio from the Social Forum on Right to Survive Radio.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not my fate.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fay. For our listeners who may not have known, Right to Survive has members who have been a part of the planning committee for the U.S. Social Forum 3. This year's Social Forum was a polycentric forum taking place in Philadelphia and San Jose, California simultaneously. Right to Survive has brought a group to San Jose to put on a workshop on the Houseless Bill of Rights campaign and to network over the week, learning and sharing of each other's experiences. Today's show features people working on a variety of social justice issues and also a Black History traveling museum. Right to Survive and myself hope you'll stay tuned and share in our amazing experience and opportunity as we made the connections between all struggles.
Mm-hmm.
is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in San Jose, California at the U.S. Social Forum. And I'm here with...
Norma Gallegos.
Norma. What brought you to the Social Forum and the Polycentric Social Forum this year?
I am the Bay Area Radicalman organizer in San Francisco and think it's very important to be here to network with other like-minded social justice, economic justice, political justice, activists, concerned folks about things that are happening in the world and in our local communities.
So I noticed here, since I've been here, I picked up a new phrase, and it's catchy, and people saying political justice. That seems like constitutional justice?
I think it's more systemic justice. So I think a lot of the issues are coming to, you know, to coming to what is the root cause of all these things. And I think a lot of people are saying capitalism is really impacting not just businesses, small businesses, but the people themselves who are in the community that are working within the system and giving their labor and giving their money to things that are not coming back to them as working people or even poor people. So I think a lot of people really think that it's no longer the economic issues that we need to fight for, but it's the entire system that needs to change and not have its direction be focused on making profits or having a business, but it's really the coming back to the community and bringing the necessities to our community.
And can you tell me the name of your organization, or are you here by yourself, and what you do or what you all do?
Bay Area Radical Women. Radical Women is a socialist, feminist, autonomous women's leadership organization. We emphasize our work around building movements for the alternative to what the system is, but a lot of the issues that women are plagued with, we politicize that. We bring leadership to women in the movements. Different women's groups don't politicize the movement to be anti-capitalist and for a socialist society. So I think what we do is a lot of our analysis comes from recognizing where movements are at and where they've been and where we think would be the best course for everyone.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you talk about radical women and women finally coming out and speaking up, because in a houseless community, I generally tell people that we all are equal. No, there's no gender preference. We all are equal, but with different responsibilities.
Yes, and I think there's just so much the way that, you know, technology has brought in a lot of different wonderful things, I mean, to our society. I think women have always been strong and resourceful. My hero is Harriet Tubman, who didn't say she was a feminist, but a lot of what she was doing was in the name of just getting there, getting some freedom and bringing, you know, black folks to freedom. But I think where women are at now is just recognizing we have no time but to keep fighting for what, you know, the basic needs that we've got. Women need water. Women need mothers. We're sisters. We're daughters. We are part of the community. But we have a force, we have a say, so I think it's working collaboratively with those around us, and the blame is never towards a gender exactly. You know, it's not men who are making this happening, it's just the mind state that we're all in. Putting that acknowledgement forward and how women can move themselves to be in a political voicing phase in their lives is really important. And I think a lot of young women, young black women, young queer black women are really, you know, getting out there, like the Black Lives Matter movement, and really politicizing these issues and saying we're done, we're ya basta, we want freedom and we're gonna fight for it, but, you know, with a lot of tact, realizing where people have been and where we're trying to go.
Especially that now you're seeing all the killings, the murders of men of color, and it's leaving all the women to nature, the children, so they should have a voice and educate the children and see and let the children see them out there. So, you know, we can have heroes and sheroes, or can we say uniroles, you know? And that's the message that needs to be put out at, and I'm glad that the social forum is accepting that, or this world, this community is starting to embrace women speaking out, doing things on their own.
Yeah, I really think, I think that's one thing that can continue to be improved within the U.S. Social Forum, is just that women, I think, need to continue to bring their stories to a politicized level and perspective. I mean, I think when Black Lives Matter movement started, it was, you know, really trying to voice and say women are also being killed by the cops. Black trans women are also being killed by the cops. So I think it's really, you know, saying the leadership of these women that, you know, don't want it to happen to them is coming out. And I think that struggle that needs to continue to happen is to say, if you don't feel you're politicized or you're political, you, the moment you start talking, that's when you're political. That's when you've got voice, and that's when we got your back. Collaborate and listen and hear, especially from the Black community, and, you know, especially the radical elements of the Black community. I really think that is the key, and supporting it and harnessing it and knowing that, yes, it is about love, but it's very much about justice.
Is there any other thing you would like to say? I thank you for bringing that out to the community and the listening audience. Is there one last thing you want to make us aware of or you want to inform us on?
I think that'll do. I'm really excited to be here and learn and talk with folks.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you much.
We are our own superheroes, fighting for our rights. We are our own superheroes.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today I'm here at the U.S. Social Forum in San Jose, California. And I'm with
Will Copeland.
And Will, what brings you to the Social Forum here in San Jose?
I'm definitely invested in the Social Forum. Myself and my organization, EMEAC, played a role in hosting the Social Forum in Detroit in 2010. And the Social Forum is very important as an open space where people can get together, progressives and radicals, to exchange, to meet each other, and to build together. So I'm very excited and came out here because we've been doing a lot of relationship building with the Bay Area. So it's very important for me to be here and continue to make more relationships and have our voices be heard.
And what is it that your organization do?
Our organization is in the fight for environmental justice in Detroit. We're working against the incinerator in Detroit, which is one of the most polluting facilities in the world. We're working against the water shutoffs in Detroit with many other community organizations, the thousands of people in Detroit who've had their home water shutoffs. And in general, we're working to have a just transition of Detroit, knowing that this economy is excluding our people, is gentrifying and damaging our community. And so it's up to us to proactively assert what vision we need to create for our communities here.
How's that going on? Are you making headway? Are you getting collective people? Or did you do any direct action?
It's definitely been some of everything. On the water issue, there's been direct action. There's been the Homrich 9, which was arrested for to block the water trucks. We're in planning of a march from Detroit to Flint, where we hope to get the mayor's attention and let them know that this water crisis is a statewide issue. And we're also doing a lot of relationship building and a lot of planning to bring people together to stop being so isolated and stop just looking at these as single issues, but that we can continue to work together to have a greater impact on Detroit as a whole and on really on going out and whatever we need to do with the state as well.
So do you think that actions that you're doing in Detroit, I was at the water and affordable housing conveyance about mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I know they plan on walking from Detroit to Flint mm-hmm. and to Lansing, I believe. And in doing that, do you think that this is happening all over the country, or just they targeting Detroit to like stage so they can do this to other cities?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, right after the situation with police brutality and Freddie Gray in Baltimore jumped off, I was noticing some articles which got a little bit, actually a lot less attention, but they were also saying that there were thousands of water shutoffs taking place in Baltimore. And so wherever our people are at, especially in a situation of poverty, especially when we also have numerical majorities, this is one tactic that could be used. And furthermore, the issue of the water shutoffs, it also connects to privatization. And privatization isn't just about poverty. Anybody, any community can be a target of privatization, which is all about the loss of control. You know, it's about corporate control. It's about having to pay for these goods, and these goods become commodities rather than the commons, which are resources that we all can enjoy. And I think that we have to work with people who see themselves as middle class or upper class and let them know that it's not right. It's not a good system to pay for everything. You know, you shouldn't just say, oh, I can have a good life and pay for everything. We should have some things which are part of the commons. And so that's a big part of what we're fighting for, which definitely is, you know, nationwide and worldwide.
And so people is paying for commodities. That's something that's natural, that was created by God, Allah, Jehovah, Buddha, whoever you want to call him. Mm-hmm. So, and now they pay, make you pay for water. Do you think you're going to have to start paying for air?
Oh, man. They're already trying to do that in terms of paying for clean air. You know what I'm saying? In which you pay more money than you live into a neighborhood where the air is a little bit cleaner, the air is a little bit fresher. You know, they're trying to get people to pay for sunlight. We're part of a group with the Climate Justice Alliance that's working on net metering. And in net metering, the power companies know that back when all the power was in coal, they had that on lock. They had that on control. And now that more solar technology is being available, they're trying to charge people a tax for using solar power. You know what I'm saying? And saying, oh, we need to get everybody back on the grid. Too many people are getting off the grid. And so if they could figure out how to charge for air, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's not as ridiculous as it seems. And so that net metering fight is a big fight, because we need to make sure that our communities can get that solar power, that we can organize and build that for our community needs, as opposed to only being dependent on the utilities.
And so you're a hip-hop artist, right? And can you tell us the name of that group and when your next concert or event is going to be?
For sure. Definitely so. Will C, W-I-L-L-S-E-E. My first album was The Basics, and it had movement anthems such as Take the Houses Back. You know what I'm saying? We taking our houses back. It had Water Power, which is a song about the water struggle. My second album is Soul Swagger. I call that a spiritual mixtape. I'm working on a new project called Detroit Diplomat, and I'm part of a crew called Detroit Culture Creators. You know, we're talking about this cultural work that we're doing. It's not just entertainment. We're making a positive culture that our people can live with and our people can depend on. We're going to be part of a show, or I'm going to be part of a show this Saturday called the What the Bleep Happened to Hip Hop Showcase, which is going to be Saturday night at the Motif Lounge in San Jose, California. Definitely so honored to be performing in the Bay Area. Mad love to the hip hop community out here. Happy to be here, and then come and catch me back in Detroit.
Thank you, Will. From Right to Survive Radio in Portland, Oregon on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And I'm in San Jose at the U.S. Social Forum, and today I'm here with
Enya Belalia.
And Enya, what brings you to the Social Forum today?
Coming out here because the Social Forum for me is a place that really honors how systemic oppression is connected, right? Things are overlapping, things are intersecting, and I was eager to come out here and see which groups are going to come through, what organizations, what folks are going to be out here, hear a little bit more about what folks are working on here on the West Coast. I think there's a lot of important things happening out here on the West Coast on a lot of different fronts, and so to see people connect and share and network, I think is really important, so I wanted to come check that out.
And you're from where?
Right now I live in Salt Lake City. I am doing work around migrant rights, around refugee rights. I do a lot of indigenous solidarity. We have a huge proposed tar sands mine in South Utah on traditional Ute territory. It will be the first commercial tar sands mine in the entire U.S. And so I've been working on that as well for the last few years.
Yeah. And can you tell the listener what are tar sand mines?
Oh, tar sands mine is actually one of the most destructive projects on the planet. It's been going on for the last 20, 30 years up in Alberta, Canada. And it's a tar sands is basically, it's a substance that's oily and that's in sand. And the way that you have to extract it from the sand is a really, really highly intensive process, both in water consumption and actually in energy consumption. The way that they get to it is they strip mine the land and then they go down, get it out of the sand, and then extract the oily substance from the rock and from the sand. It's a really destructive project, and it's never heard of on that scale here in the U.S. Could really open up a wider energy colony in the greater Southwest, but also just, you know, put ideas in too many corporations' heads in terms of that kind of industry here in the States.
Is that a dry form of fracking?
I think it could be related to fracking, yeah, except the difference is that they don't, you know, they don't go down and make and explode things underground the way that a fracking would be. Don't know if I'm enough of an expert to make that metaphor. Good question, though.
Like, what's the name of your organization?
Right now, I'm actually not attached to any organization, but the organization that's fighting this tar sands mining project is Peaceful Uprising, which is an organization that I used to be a part of. But right now, I'm actually living that kind of autonomous organizer life. It's nice. It's nice. You get to work on a lot of different issues and kind of respond where things are needed. I think we all fit different roles, and that's the role that kind of makes sense for me right now.
This is tar sand. Is it gentrifying or creating houselessness, people losing their housing and stuff, or is messing with the environmental?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's a huge environmental impact. I don't know that, you know, I can say that tar sands mining is directly creating houselessness because it's happening in a very remote area in what is called the Tavaputs Plateau of Utah. So there's not really people living, but what it's definitely doing is it's destroying native territory. It's, you know, it would have a huge impact on water because water up there on the Colorado Plateau then is connected to the Colorado River. And as we know, the Colorado River goes all the way down to Mexico, which means that there's millions of people that will be impacted by poisoned water. But I think one of the most important things is that it is impacting native sovereign territory. As far as how it's impacted housing in cities, for example, in Salt Lake City, like in many cities across the United States, and most of the people who are living near refineries are communities of color. There are communities that are low-income communities, and a lot of those communities are being the most impacted by this refining, and a lot of the refining of the tar sands from the Tavaputs Plateau would happen in Salt Lake refineries. And so we are seeing a huge phenomenon of gentrification in Salt Lake City, for example, where, as we're seeing in many other parts of the country, where people are being forced out of communities that they've been living in and also forced more and more in the communities that are the most dangerous, most risky to live in as far as health impacts.
So is it safe to say this capitalist corporate government attacking people of color and community of poverty?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that that's how the system thrives. I mean, capitalism thrives off of colonization, thrives off of white supremacy, thrives off of some folks having money and some folks not having money. And so I think the fact that corporations are making decisions for how governments are making decisions and how, you know, our laws are enacted and whatnot, and so they have their hands in so many aspects, many steps of the process, of the political process, says a lot. And yeah, we can definitely always see that the communities most targeted are indigenous communities, communities of color, low-income communities, and queer and trans communities as well.
Is there any one last thing you'd like to tell the listening audience?
The last thing I will say is...
I was going to say, yeah. Hey, the sun got to you.
It's too hot out here. Yeah, the last thing I want to say is I think we're at a time where a lot of people are starting to connect the dots. A lot of people are starting to really understand how things are interconnected and how things are, you know, we as human beings are interconnected. The systems within which we live are interconnected. But also to understand that some of our communities have known this for a very long time because it's in our bodies, it's in our histories. You know, we carry the historical trauma in our DNA and our flesh. There's just been a study that came out recently that actually proves that, you know, communities, people carry trauma in their DNA, and that indigenous communities particularly have the highest rate of trauma here in these lands, which is very understandable given the history. And so as we continue to figure out, to understand the narratives of how things are connected, also understanding our place within that, you know, our places of privilege, where we need to be responsible, in our places of oppression to speak from, and so that as we continue this work, we understand who are the folks that need to be lifted up, who are the voices that need to be elevated, which is one of the things that I know is one of the guiding principles of the U.S. Social Forum, which I think is a very good thing to really elevate and lift up the most marginalized voices, and not in tokenizing interesting ways and ways that really honor the knowledge and the wisdom and the history of people who've been resisting to stay alive for many generations.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Ibrahim Ubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're at the U.S. Social Forum in San Jose, California. And I'm here with
David Cobb of Move to Amend and 2004 Green Party presidential candidate.
Okay. And David, what brings you here to the Social Forum?
Well, I'm at the Social Forum because it is the spot where the oppressed of society are coming together, not merely asking for a seat at the table, but literally creating the space. We're at a space where young people, people of color, immigrants, women, LGBT, homeless, folks who are typically fighting just to be heard, have literally come together and said, we're going to organize a space where we talk to each other, not only about critiquing the system, and by golly, we got some critiques of this system, but we're talking about what is our vision for a new world that is based on peace, justice, democracy, and ecological sustainability, and most importantly, Ibrahim, what are our plans to create that world? So I'm here because where else would I be?
Okay, and so we connect in the dots and so on. We all have some type of commonality.
Ibrahim, so well said. And our commonality is this. We are all, many of us, struggling on homeless issues or environmental protection issues or the prison industrial complex or the corporatization of media or the corporatization of healthcare. At the end of the day, those are actually all united struggles because the struggle is about the majority to assert its will over the minority. And I want to name it. It's called capitalism. It's actually called an economic political system where a small ruling elite are running the show over the rest of us. And you know what, Ibrahim? The thing that scares the ruling elite the most is whenever somebody like you sits down with somebody like me. And in case y'all can't tell, I'm a white southern dude from Texas, right? And so when we, Ibrahim and David, find common ground and start to recognize our shared humanity and our brotherhood and say, you know what? We are actually united together against that ruling elite. That's real power. That's why I'm here.
All right. Now tell us what Move to Amend do.
Move to Amend is a multiracial, multi-ethnic coalition of groups and individuals who are coming together to demand the abolition in its entirety of the illegitimate court-created idea that corporations are persons with constitutional rights and that money is speech. Those two court-created legal doctrines are part of the foundation for how the ruling elite have actually created a system that is basically racist, sexist, and class oppressive, and are using our legal system to legalize that. We say, ya basta, enough already. We're going to create a multiracial movement that actually says we the people are supposed to rule ourselves.
What was the latest action or direct action that you have done?
Well, the latest concrete action is actually our proposed amendment introduced into Congress, where five members of the House of Representatives are supporting that proposal, and we are getting larger, stronger, and better organized. Let me end with this. We were 12 people in a living room in 2010. Today, we're 400,000 people and growing. We have helped 600 communities pass resolutions of support. 300 communities have put it on the ballot where ordinary people can vote on it. And get this, Ibrahim, we've won every single one of them. And not just in liberal places like Boston, Massachusetts, and San Francisco, California. Yes, we won there. You know where else we won? Salt Lake City, Utah. We won in Devlin, Wisconsin, which is the hometown of Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker, where they haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress in 40 years. We were on the ballot there and we won. We won in the state of Montana. Yes, that Montana. A statewide initiative where our proposed language on the ballot, and we won by 74% of the vote. Ibrahim, this is working and it's going to continue to work. And KBOO listeners, we need your help. Last thing I'm going to say is this. You're only listening to this conversation because KBOO is people's radio. You're listening to Ibrahim's voice as a houseless advocate, as part of Right to Dream, because we are creating this radio station. And it's ours, and you need to support it because you need KBOO just like KBOO needs you.
That's right. And what's that word? Zabasta?
Ya basta. It means enough already. Y'all boss. Alrighty, man. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Okay. This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in San Jose, California at the United States Social Forum 3. I'm here with
Khaled El-Hakim.
Salam, Khaled. What brings you to San Jose at the Social Forum?
I was invited to come here to bring a project that I've developed called the Black History 101 Mobile Museum. So I've been here for the past couple of days with an exhibit on display and just really networking with people and learning about different struggles that people are having around the country.
In networking, bringing the mobile Black history, do you see a lot of people when they see your exhibits, which I saw, and it reminds me of some of the things that I was taught when they finally put Black history into school, was I knew some I knew half of, some I didn't know of. Mm. But do you see now the generation or people that's not people of color, white people, going in awe? Did this really happen, or do they feel remorse or anything?
Well, the material that I've bought out today, man, I would say 99% of the material that's on display here is material that people have never been taught in schools before. So when people come in, they're taken aback by some of this material. And what makes the material so significant is the fact that it's original, and there's no denying, you know, when you have these artifacts that were created in America, there's no denying the fact that, you know, it really happened, it's real, you know. And it's a part of history that we have to deal with, that and if we don't deal with it, then we'll never come to a solution, you know, of some of these problems we have in terms of race in America.
And do you think by showing this exhibit that brings the understanding of the anger that the Black African-American community or people of color have against this country or the white race per se?
Well, it's definitely a starting point. You know, you won't find the solutions here, but you'll find the evidence. And through that evidence, we can start conversations about how we move forward in developing an understanding of what needs to be done, you know. So, the material here is just for us to, you know, start these conversations that have to happen.
And in looking at your material, I saw something in the book, I think it was Ebony or Jet, and said, again, and it showed the police had beaten a Black man with blood all on his face. Can you explain that?
I'm assuming you're looking at one of the older Jet magazines.
Ebony.
You're thinking of the very last piece on the table. That's actually a final call.
Yeah, final call.
And you're looking at a cover photo of a brother who was recently beat up on a college campus. And so, yes, again, like, there's another one. So we live in a day and time, man, where we see an increase on the attack of Black men, young Black men and women in America. And it's going to continue happening if we don't come together and you know, focus on holding people accountable for that type of abuse in our communities.
And then speaking of that note, that was my next question. Do you think that showing how this happened in the past and now it's been formatted in a different form but same aggressive movement, that it can help people see what's happening and we can come together as a whole, not just as a race but as a country, to stop this crucial attack on people of color, especially young Black men?
Yeah, one of the powerful things about using history as a guide and using some of these objects as a guide, again, it makes you look at the reality of history, that this is not something new. Our abuse and the violence towards Black people is not something that just happened. This is something that we experienced from our very first experience on the west coast of Africa with Europeans bringing us over here in the hold of ships. So, and it hasn't stopped. So we have, you know, these are our reminders that, you know, white supremacy and racism exists in America, and it's going to continue to exist, and that looking at history, we have to look at those who have sacrificed their lives and those who have fought and struggled in history, and take the best of that struggle and move that forward, and, you know, internalize that and move that forward and become a part of that struggle. It's important for us to reflect upon that and see where we fit in history in 2015, and how do we continue this fight for our liberation in America.
Well, I mean, we have Supreme Court justices, we have lawyers, we have people owning big business and stocking business, we even have a president. Does that show a move forward, or do that show just a slightly blip in capitalism?
Well, we definitely have made progress. We have more African Americans in a variety of different positions of influence that we probably have had ever in since we've been on these shores, which is, you know, on a surface level, a very good thing. However, when you look at the gaps in terms of our wealth in America, when you look at the gaps towards academic achievement, when you look at the gaps in health disparities, when you look at the gaps in terms of law enforcement injustice, when you look at the gaps towards employment, those are realities that this system has not addressed in a proper way for us. So that sheds, you know, a totally different light. I mean, you're going to have, you know, some successes in, you know, representing the community, of course, you know. But when you look at the masses of Black people in our suffering, and you look at these gaps, we see that, you know, we still have a long way to go in terms of how we're living in America and the system.
So in looking at your display, the first thing I see is some real shackles, man. Them things is heavy, man. So that means the brothers and sisters had to be strong back in those days to walk with that. And then I saw a real Ku Klux Klan KKK mask. Can you let the listening audience know, who's not able to see this fantastic display of discrimination, brutal brutality, nonsense to these people, what other things you have on display?
All right, so besides the original slave shackles that came from a plantation in North Carolina, it came from an archaeological dig several years ago, you have original photos of lynchings. You have Jim Crow era memorabilia that have representations of negative stereotypical caractères of Black people, such as your Mammy character and your Pickaninny characters, your Uncle Remus type character. You have imagery of, one thing I've been researching recently is the imagery of alligator bait, Black babies being used as alligator bait. And a lot of people think that that was, you know, kind of like a myth and that wasn't real. But based upon my research, I found out that it was a very, very real thing in American history, not only in America, but in other British colonies, such as Sri Lanka, for example, where there was a practice of them baiting alligators by tying Black babies to trees along riverbeds. And when the babies would cry and squirm, it would excite the alligators and bring them out of the riverbank, out of the river, and then to be killed by hunters. But in many cases, you know, Black babies would be killed by these alligators. So that's something else that's on display. But besides that, there's many documents that are signed by a variety of different historical icons, people such as Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass. There's documents signed by W.E.B. Du Bois, Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, Coretta Scott King, Assata Shakur, H. Rap Brown, Mutulu Shakur, Kathleen Cleaver, Afrika Bambaataa, and the list goes on. But the exhibit is broken down into different periods, including the Black Power era, the Black Arts era, and hip-hop. So it's a very diverse exhibit. It's about 200 artifacts on display today. People are feeling it. They're enjoying themselves when they walk through.
We all hope that your display is not, don't carry on, because now you got the Black Lives Matter, don't shoot, right, the choking and the lynching of people, the Black children. So that means it's going to further your paraphernalia, aggressive actions taken against the Black people.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a collector, so I'm always going to collect these types of objects. So there's really no ending, you know, to this timeline, you know. So you know, it's only going to get larger. But I'm hoping that, you know, these objects remind people that, you know, they have to become a part of this struggle and have to come together and really unify to address these pressing issues in our society.
Okay, thank you. Is anything else you would like to say? Where are you originally located from? Do you go all over the country doing this display, or your traveling museum? Can we say that?
Well, again, this is called the Black History 101 Mobile Museum, so I'm actually mobile. I've traveled to 23 states in country. Over 60 college campuses, like K-12 schools, churches, mosques, public libraries, you know, pretty much anywhere I'm invited, I come. But on top of that, I'm from Detroit, born and raised in Detroit, and that's where the collection originates. And one thing I wanted to bring up, too, is that we're in the 20th year anniversary of the Million Man March this year. It was at the Million Man March that the idea of this mobile museum came about. Prior to the Million Man March, this was just a private collection that I would share with friends and family and some of my students. But after I came back from the Million Man March, this was my contribution back to the community. I wanted to definitely acknowledge that. And then on top of that, encourage people to come to the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March. Minister Farrakhan recently made a call for us to come back to D.C. on October 10th this year, 2015. When we think about what's going on in society, Minister Farrakhan is saying, at this point, we're saying, you know, there's justice or else, you know. Either we're going to have justice or we're going to have to deal with the real consequences of not living in a just society. So that's what we're demanding.
Have you ever been met with any resistance?
Overall, no, but I mean, again, the evidence speaks for itself. It's really no arguing when you have this evidence in front of you. A lot of people are shocked by it. You know, you can't say that it didn't exist when you see it right in front of you. So,
any last words you would like to say?
No, I appreciate the interview. If people are interested in booking the exhibit, my information is you can call me at 313-645-4197. You can find me on Facebook. The fan page is Black History 101 Mobile Museum, Khalid El Hakim, El-HAKIM. And the website is www.blackhistory101mobilemuseum.com.
Thank you very much. And you all should really see this. It's an amazing thing. Like, it took me back. It brought me to memory. It almost caused anger, but if you understand, you can contain that anger. So thank you for having this.
Thank you, brother.
KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial out of Portland, Oregon. And today I'm at the U.S. Social Forum in San Jose, California. And I'm with
Jared Hamill, and I'm a member of the Freedom Road Socialist Organization.
Gregory Lucero from Salt Lake City, Utah, I'm also a member of the Freedom Road.
And what brings you to the Social Forum today?
The Social Forum is a really good opportunity to interact, connect, learn from people, and also put out our political message, which is Marxism-Leninism. What we believe is that we need a revolution in this society. Things cannot continue in the same way that they are, and so it's great to just meet a bunch of activists and radicals and revolutionaries and really just sort of connect with them.
Yeah, I mean, generally, you know, people all over the country are fighting, so it's good to see who's doing what and how to connect with that. The activism I do in Tampa, Florida might be similar to what somebody's doing in San Jose, or maybe not at all, you know, but it's good to learn from each other, and I think that's why a lot of people come here today.
And so, what do you hold for your organization to bring or educate the people here?
Well, I think one of the main things is that the working class has the power to change society. And, you know, by linking up with the working class, by understanding what it means to be working class and having that ability to change things, I hope people can take away from that. You know, joining with the labor movement, joining with labor unions, and fighting on the shop floor, from the shop floor to police brutality to anywhere, those struggles are connected. You know, we have a lot of information about it, and if you can come to the table, we'll be more than happy to talk about it.
You?
So, again, I really want to echo what the brother said. You know, it's to say that the power is in the hands of the working class. But also, I have, as do others, a more direct political goal, which is Razmea Oda is a Palestinian activist who's been under attack by the U.S. government. It's completely politically motivated. There's no foundation for it. It was a kangaroo court. It was ridiculous. She was railroaded, and now they're trying to imprison and deport her. And so one of the things that I'm really interested in, I know that other members of the Freedom Road are interested in, said, is making people aware that this country has severe political repression. And in fact, we're having a panel on political repression where many of our members and friends have been raided by the FBI for purely political reasons. And so to help people understand that we do not live in a free society, and it's on us to fight to make it a free society. And, you know, we're not going to have freedom unless we fight for it and move it down the road, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you know, not only what you expect to get, but what you're going to give, and you just told me. So maybe you can tell me, because it kind of like throw me for a loop sometimes. What's the difference between socialism and social justice?
Well, I would say that, you know, social justice, there's a lot of problems in society right now, you know? And so what's an immediate thing that we can fight for today? For instance, there's going to be a panel tomorrow that some of us are also hosting on immigrants' rights and the need for legalization for immigrants. You know, there's 12 million immigrants that are undocumented in this country that have no legal rights, no anything. In fact, they're exploited, they're deported, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so in terms of social justice, I think that's one thing that socialists can link up with in the fight to move things forward. Socialism is obviously one of the end goals. Well, how do we change society, and what do we change it to? If we think that working class people, you know, should control everything, our daily aspects and of life, and have determined things for themselves, what is that end goal? That is socialism.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to disagree with the brother just a little bit here. I would say social justice is the goal, and socialism is institutionalized social justice. When we're talking about any system, a system of politics, a system of economics, a media, a social system, we have to ask, what is the system, who is it made for, who does it serve? And currently we live under capitalism, which is a system for the bosses, the bankers, the Wall Street fat cats. What we want is, we want a system for the workers, for the farmers, for the immigrants, for the gas station attendants, for the undocumented people, for the stay-at-home, you know, husbands or wives who take care of kids. And what sort of system is that? Well, that's institutionalized social justice, which more simply goes by the term socialism.
Do you think that, I hear you talk about a lot of undocumented, do you think that this country should have no borders, people should be able to free and roam wherever they want to?
Generally, I think that, yes, people should have free democratic rights to move. You know, the EU didn't disintegrate when people from Spain were able to travel to France. But furthermore, I think that the United States is confusing to a lot of people, and the reason why it's confusing is because everyone thinks of it as one nation under God, but it's actually multiple nations. There are indigenous nations, there's the Aztlan, Chicano nation, there's a Black Belt nation, and so I am for free travel and free movement, but that's meaningless when people ask any black or brown person, myself included, whether I'm free to walk down the street in the richer neighborhoods. You know, we can talk about having no borders, and, you know, that's a discussion people can have, but I'm for the freedom of movement, especially for those who are moving, migrant workers, you know, undocumented workers who are forced to move and do so under the threat of arrest, harassment, torture, and deportation. So generally, yeah, I do support free movement.
Yeah, I don't think that people are just moving like they're on vacation. You know, I think you look at 12 million undocumented immigrants in this country, it's not because they just got up and decided, you know what, I'm going to move. It's because of things that the United States does. And I think that we have to remember that there's a connection between the role that the United States plays in the world and immigration. NAFTA in the 90s under Clinton caused huge millions of immigrants from Mexico to move to the United States because small towns dried up. Large agribusiness corporations moved down there and took over everything. And where do people go? Where can people survive? And they always survive where the money is. So they go across the border. They go across the desert. They do anything that they can just so they can get a little bit of the pie. And so it's the same with other countries too. And some countries are even worse, you know. We invade other countries with force. So you could say that in the name of the dollar.
So do you think that a big gap between corporate rights and human rights, and corporate rights are superseding human rights?
Well, so that's the thing is, I understand your question, and a lot of people like to phrase it. I don't believe in corporate rights. I believe they're an institution human beings came up with. We thought them up. We wrote the papers. We organize ourselves in a particular way. Yeah, of course corporations have, in this society, more rights than human beings because we live under capitalism, and the dollar daughter matters more than the child. You know, it's the corporation matters more than the school. You know, the investment matters more than the community. And so, yeah, of course. But, you know, that's to say is I don't think there should be any corporate rights. And furthermore, you know, we're not going to have justice until we fight for it. And we're not going to have anything even resembling human rights unless we take a stand and fight for it.
And so I hear you talking about the working class. I'm not completely against the working class if they use their working class status to help the rest of the world.
Well, I think that's the only class that has the potential to do so. You know, the ruling class, the class that owns the businesses, the corporation, doesn't have the interest of helping anyone. The only one does is the working class. So, sure, use the status. I guess you could say that. But it's about organizing, and it's about those here in the United States and helping those everywhere. Being in solidarity with the working class across the oceans.
Thank you much. Thank you, Albert.
My pleasure.
Anything, one last thing you want to say?
It's an absolute pleasure. Okay. Thank you so much.
This is Ibrahim Ubard from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial out of Portland, Oregon. And today we're in San Jose, California at the United States Social Forum 3. And I'm here today with
Tara Villalba.
Tara Villalba, can you tell us what brings you to the Social Forum in San Jose?
I'm here because I'm part of an organization called Community to Community, and we are holding a People's Movement Assembly tomorrow, as well as a picket line at Costco to inform consumers about Driscoll's and the berry boycott that Farm Worker Union in Burlington, Washington State, have called for a boycott not to purchase Driscoll's berries.
What do Jazz Community do?
Community to Community is a farm worker led organization. It was started by a farm worker, Rosalinda Guillen, whose vision is to build a different food system. So if the system's going to change, it's going to transition. It's up to us if that transition is going to be a just transition or not. And I'm here because I'm committed to a just transition away from fossil fuels and into a food system that's good for the planet and for all people.
And we know that in traveling, I know you travel, we have cross paths in traveling, that when we go to the cities that's being attacked by poverty, they don't have fresh vegetables or fruits and stuff in these cities. Is that something community help to activate people getting fresh vegetables?
You know, the that really animates community to community is that the people that grow those fresh vegetables don't have access to those food that they're actually growing, that they can't afford them, or they are so full of pesticides from the workplace to what they actually eat that it isn't healthy for any of the workers that work along the food system. And so Bellingham, where C2C is based, there's lots of healthy produce in the city of Bellingham. But as soon as you start moving out to the county, you don't find, you know, local organic produce anymore. What you find are the conventional tomatoes that are grown in Mexico, and where the tomato pickers in Mexico just barely got out of a strike. And so it's, you know, it's not just about the quality of the food, but the conditions of the people that work to produce that food. That's what animates the work that we do.
Okay, and so you all just trying to make sure the people that's producing those food is in good health, their state of being, and can afford the food they produce.
Exactly, which is something that isn't happening right now.
And what else do you plan on doing here at the Social Forum? What do you plan on getting out of the Social Forum? What you plan on putting into or sharing?
So what I'm planning on doing here in the Social Forum is really checking out and connecting to other people who are just as committed in ending this capitalist structure that is really just choking the life out of our communities and building something different. You know, not just something different, but something different that has room for people like me, people who are parents, people who don't live in the traditional nuclear family arrangement, people who have low wages, people who are immigrants, people who are queer, people who are gender nonconforming. All of that stuff has to be in the new system that we make, because otherwise we're not going to end any oppression unless we're actually working to end all of them.
And what you plan on getting out of
it? I hope to get out of it connections with people, that we actually get connected, that we don't feel so alone, that we, you know, there's something about seeing a lot of people innovate, people innovating, people coming up with the solutions that make sense in the places where they're at. That's what really inspiring to me. This is my daughter.
Hey, say hi.
Hi.
I know when I was in Jackson, Mississippi, farmers was dedicating their time and their land to educate people how to farm free so they could, so the government won't take over the land. Is that something that you know of, or something that you are trying to do in Bellingham, or something that you want to connect?
So one of the things that's real in Bellingham, the first reality is that farm workers don't have access to land to grow food that makes sense for them. That has to change. The second thing is that the traditional and historical food of the Pacific Northwest is actually salmon. And if we're not protecting the oceans and the Salish Sea, we are not moving in solidarity with indigenous communities, that food stream is not going to be restored. So I see my work, that in order to get a healthy food system that is from that place, that responds to that place, we have to be in solidarity with the indigenous folks like the Lummi and the Nooksack who are protecting salmon. And we do have to think about the lands that have been appropriated from Native communities and make sure that those are accessible, are redistributed, that they have access to water, that we have the ability to grow food for ourselves, not billions of berries for a group to enjoy on their ice cream.
So I know in 2000, the people that was fishing went on strike, and they had all this fish, and they was giving it to anybody that would accept it. They wouldn't sell it to the markets. Do you think that would ever happen in a farmer's market? People would take their vegetables and not sell it to the corporate stores, but give it to the local people.
You know, that's the goal. The goal is a solidarity economy. The goal is an economy that isn't based on profit. It's based on that people are that they're getting adequate things to eat, that we have someplace to live, that we have access to medical care. Those are the things that you know, when it comes to it, what does a human need? That's what we need. Everything else is just frou-frou around it. It's not really what we need. That's what we need. And so what we're trying to do is build an economy, a local economy in Bellingham that is based on solidarity and not on profit.
Do you see more community gardens in the future that's rising up?
Let's hope so, but not those, you know, kind of, not the, what do you say? not the corporate, not the hipster gardens, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm talking about gardens that get to grow the food that the people want to eat. And also part of it is one of the things that we do in C2C is a program called Cocina Sanas, where we cook together, substituting local produce in traditional recipes. So we might make tamales, instead of spinach, we might make them out of kale, because there's a lot of kale being grown in our gardens. And so learning how to use produce that is locally sourced and organic in a traditional kitchen.
Are you for Monsanto's GMO? Oh, y'all should see the look I just got, y'all.
Monsanto is evil and should be ended. And more than that, any money that they have should be put to remediating the damage they've caused on the planet.
Okay. Anything else you would like to say before we go?
No, keep doing the work that you're doing.
All right. Thank you very much. Community to community, y'all. And they site, they blog, they website is?
www.foodjustice.org. And we also have a Facebook page, Community to Community Development.
Thank you, Mark.
I've learned a lot from our interviews and can see how we all can relate and connect to what's going on in upstate Washington, in California, in Michigan, in Florida, and across the nation. All around us, people are speaking out against injustice, fighting for their rights, and making commitments to create the type of world we want to live in. Freedom is not free. It's up to us to ensure the future for generations to come. Right to Survive can be heard here on KBOO, the second Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. Right to Survive meets the second and fourth Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sisters of the Road Cafe, Northwest 6th and Davis, on the Max Line. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, Wix, WordPress, and Vimeo. Reach us, as we would love to hear from you, at r2spdx@gmail.com. Again, I'm your host, Lisa Fay, and from all of the R2S members, thanks to all who participated in interviews, and to our listening audience, thank you for tuning in to Right to Survive Radio. Be kind to one another. Till next time, much love.
This is KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Right to Survive Radio. Up next is Hard Knock. But first, this information just for you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Yes Men Are Revolting as part of the KBOO at the Clinton monthly film series. The Yes Men Are Revolting is a documentary directed by Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno, which follows the comedy troupe The Yes Men as they stage phony press releases and events to bring attention to environmental dangers and corporate greed. Again, that's The Yes Men Are Revolting, Thursday, August 13th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the African Hip Hop Caravan Benefit Show, August 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup in Portland. All ages are welcome to this benefit show, featuring Mike Crenshaw and Rashid Jamal, to raise funds and awareness for their November trip to various countries in Africa. Again, that's a benefit show for the African Hip Hop Caravan on